Now, from Hollywood, Romance. In a hot, sultry port on the west coast of India, 12 passengers wait to board a ship that will take them home. They are English, French, Dutch, and American. Men and women whose lives for 3.5 years have been encircled by the barbed wire of a Japanese prison camp. And now they are going home. With Ellen Morgan as Pamela and Hans Conried as Captain Arndal, we bring you transcribed Leonard St. Clair's dramatic new radio play, The Long Way Home. The thermometer in the embarkation room stood at 102. Cool for the port of Cochin on the Malabar coast of India. It was August the 7th, 1945. Hiroshima and the atomic bomb plus one day. August and the southwest monsoon. Outside it was raining, and inside, steaming bedlam. There were the British military, Indian porters, seamen and stevedores, International Red Cross agents, port officials and police, and the 12 passengers who were to go aboard the Nordsfjord.
I thought I recognized you. You were on the same plane that blew us out from Singapore. Which
let me through, please. Let me through.
Move along there.
Sure, the war's as good as over. Drop another atomic bomb and that'll be it.
Show your papers. Show your...
Let me through, please.
But it's such a short message. It's to the International Red Cross in Israel.
I'm sorry, madame. No wireless messages may be sent of a personal nature.
Well, surely they could make an exception if there are special circumstances, an urgent reason.
Madame, everyone in this room has an urgent reason. They are all special circumstances, or they wouldn't be here. Nothing can be done until we get new orders.
Major, if you please.
Ah, Captain Arndal. Come for your sailing papers, I suppose.
I was told they'd be here at your desk.
Right, sir, as soon as I find them.
Major, if you can't send my message now, could you keep it here and send it when your orders change?
Aye, but who knows when that will be.
Oh, please, just on the chance.
All right, I'll file it. Ah, here we are, your papers, Captain.
Thank you.
And a safe voyage to you, sir.
Sailed at 1400 hours. A captured German freighter with the name Nordsfjord freshly painted on bow and stern. Home port, Oslo. A port which she'd never seen. An obedient captain and crew who had served out the war in the Pacific and Indian Oceans. And Wellington Island disappearing astern. And we were in the open sea. The rain broke off. The sun came out just before it set.
Advance to full speed.
Advance to full speed, yes, sir.
A long voyage ahead, Mr. Orley.
A very long voyage, sir.
Across the Arabian Sea, the Gulf of Aden, up the Red Sea, Suez Canal, the Mediterranean, and home.
And home. Ah. Very pretty, isn't she, sir?
Huh?
The lady standing up there in the bow, Mrs. Bruner.
You know her?
No, sir. The steward told me her name, Pamela Bruner. English girl married to a German national.
Mm. Very pretty. Walks with a good deal of grace. Could be a dancer.
Oh, that's a good guess, sir. Steward saw her unpack her bags. There was a photo of her with some ballet troupe.
Mr. Orlick... You are going home, you know. You've got a girl.
It's been 5 years, sir. A lot could have happened.
A lot has happened, Mr. Orley. Too much. We were going home. And yet I could feel no excitement among my officers and crew. And at dinner that first evening, there were a few smiles among the passengers. Mr. Maxwell, the American, seemed the only one who cared to talk. And he addressed all his remarks to Mrs. Bruner. Apparently, they'd known each other in the Japanese prison camp. And before that, he had been a Singapore agent for an American oil company. After dinner, I returned to the bridge. About mid-evening, the radio officer phoned and asked me to come to the wireless room.
Sir, this lady insists that I radio a personal message for her.
I see. Mrs. Bruner, I believe I heard the embarkation officer in Cochin tell you that that could not be done.
But now we're at sea, Captain Ando. This is your ship. You're the only authority.
And my authority is subject to the Army and Navy commands, madam. We are under radio silence.
Well, if you'll let me explain why...
I'm very sorry.
I went out to Singapore with a ballet company from Europe. My husband was in Vienna, but he was going to join me. And then I got word the Nazis had arrested him. They sent him to a concentration camp, to Belsen. I tried to get back to him, and then Singapore fell. The Japanese took me to a detention camp. For 3.5 years, Eric and I have had no word from each other. Don't you see? I want him to know that I'm coming home, that I'm alive.
You are alive, Mrs. Bruner. But your husband?
Even Belsen could not kill my husband, Captain.
I wish I had your confidence, madam.
He is alive.
And if he is?
Then I'm sure he's gone to Israel. Just before we said goodbye the last time, Eric and I made plans to go to Israel. We wanted to live and work there. Captain, let me send my message. Let the Red Cross find Eric so he can be waiting for me at Point Said.
Mr. Bornison, you will follow your instructions. Radio silence not to be broken.
Yes, sir.
Captain Ando.
Madam, you believe in miracles. I do not.
I see. Good night, gentlemen.
I told myself that only fools or saints could have such faith. What could I believe about my own wife, my own son? For almost 5 years, the enemy had occupied Norway. After 5 years, what was I going home to? On our third day out, one of the passengers, Mrs. Rowley, invited everyone to what she gaily called a tea party in the passengers' lounge.
Well, everybody seems to be here. Except, of course, Mrs. Bruner and Mr. Maxwell. But that's to be expected, isn't it?
In what way, Mrs. Rowley?
Oh, now, really, Captain. You must have noticed our shipboard romance.
Mrs. Bruner has a husband, Mrs. Rowley, or at least she thinks she has.
Oh. Did you hear that, everybody? Oh, Captain, you're simply delightful.
After that, I began to watch as they were together a great deal, walking the deck, playing cards, always together. On the fourth night out, I had trouble sleeping. I left my cabin and went to the lounge for a magazine. As I started to enter, I heard music coming from the shortwave radio and voices.
How do you know that's the Vienna station? We haven't heard an announcement.
It's Vienna. I remember the wavelength.
Oh, sometimes I think you remember too much.
Oh, happiness should be remembered. My first solo with the ballet. Eric's first big concert. The night he played Chopin with the Vienna Philharmonic. Those are the lasting things, Tony.
Yeah. Until a war comes along and destroys everything.
I wish you could have seen our home, Tony. Our garden went right down to the bank of the Danube. There were rose bushes and lilacs and a little pool filled with water lilies.
You can have another garden, Pam. Bigger and better, anything you want. I told you when I hit New York, there's over 3 years back pay waiting for me.
Eric used to play this waltz. It was one of his encore numbers.
Oh, Pam, don't keep shutting me out. I can give you a good home, a fine home.
Tony, I'm already married. I've got a husband.
But you don't know
it. I do. Eric is alive. I know it.
I hope he is, Pam, if he means that much to you. But suppose you do find him. You've got to be prepared. Don't expect things to be just as they always were.
Don't expect...
Oh, years have gone by. Things are bound to be different.
You're saying that Eric may not still love me, is that it?
Pam, I don't want to be cruel, but...
You're telling me that Eric may not want to see me again. That Belsen has destroyed him.
Eric's had to live his own life for a long while, Pam.
A life you've had no part of.
This is your musical digest broadcast from the Armed Forces radio station in Rome, Italy.
Rome? Oh, no. No, it's Vienna.
That's what I mean, Pam. You can't go back and pick up life as it was. The world has changed. Vienna, your home, your garden, your husband, everything's different now.
Turn it off, Tony. Turn it off.
Oh, Pam, listen. Take what you're already sure of. You know that I love you. It's not something you've got to find out when we reach Port Said. It exists here, now. The life I can give you, it's real. Take it, Pam. Take it.
Please, Tony. Please. You've got to give me this time.
We will return to romance and our story, The Long Way Home, in just a moment. The case of the Kansas collectors engrosses your gangbusters Monday night on most of these same CBS radio stations. It's a true story about a gang that terrorized the Midwest, but the law finally caught up with them in a way you'll be surprised to hear. It's Gangbusters, Monday night at the Star's address. And now for the second act of The Long Way Home as we return to romance.
Sixth day out of coach in the Nordsfjord entered the currents of the Gulf of Aden. At sunset, the seventh day, we sighted the brown bluffs of Saudi Arabia. By dawn, we were steaming northwest through the Red Sea. I was going up to the bridge as the radio officer dashed out of the wireless room.
Captain, sir, I want you to hear something.
Something wrong, Mr. Warner, son?
Quick, sir.
It is further reported that the Emperor of Japan will make a special broadcast to his people, announcing the complete and unconditional surrender.
It is peace, sir. Peace.
Mr. Orlick, sound for boat drill immediately. Start the siren. Assemble all hands on the foredeck.
Passengers and crew listened to me in a kind of stunned silence. And then all at once, the realization came. Peace. At last. The ship's carpenter brought out an old Grand phonograph. The two Dutch passengers did a polka on the forward hatch. The three Frenchmen led the deckhands in the final chorus of the Marseillaise. The English passengers replied that God save the king. The ship's cook found two bottles of champagne, which he brought to the lounge. Passengers and officers raised their glasses to each other.
All right, everybody. The toast. To peace, to a better world and a new life for all of us.
To peace!
Well.
It's hard to believe, isn't it, Captain?
Yes.
Well, come on, drink up, everybody. Let's not let the party die. Mrs. Raleigh, you told us you used to be in vaudeville. How about a song? Mrs. Raleigh.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was just wondering if my son and daughter have heard the news yet. They live in Coventry, you know. Or at least they did before the Blitz.
Oh, yeah, sure. Hey, Pam, you got a pretty good voice, haven't you?
Not now, Jerry.
Well, look, what's the matter with everybody? One minute we're laughing and singing, it's the biggest day of our lives, and now, well, what's wrong? What is it?
I think he knew, but no one had the courage to put it into words. After so many years of war, peace itself was frightening. We were going back to lives and homes and people that could no longer defend themselves with the excuse there's a war going on. What were they going to find? And what was I going to find? For 2 days, we steamed through the Red Sea. During that time, Maxwell and Mrs. Brunner were always together, by her choice or his insistence. Mr. Bornison.
Yes, sir.
Take this message to the director of Canal Traffic. Our position is 36 degrees, 12 minutes east, 26 degrees, 1 minute north. Estimated approach the Suez Canal, 1,700 hours tomorrow.
1,700 hours, yes, sir.
And we await his confirmation and instructions as to the pilot.
Yes, sir. I get it off right away.
Captain Arndell.
Yes, Miss Bruner?
I'd like your permission to talk by radio telephone to the International Red Cross.
In Israel?
Yes. I want to know if my message from Cochin got through to them.
I doubt it. Radio silence still applies to personal messages. We're on this ship.
But the war is over.
Technically, yes.
Captain, I'm sorry if I seem unreasonable, but my whole future life depends on finding my husband.
You are assuming, of course, that he's alive.
He has to be.
Mrs. Bruner, you are not the only passenger who has asked to use our wireless. We cannot accommodate anyone until our orders change.
I see. Very well.
And Mrs. Bruner.
Yes?
If your husband is not waiting for you at Port Said, will you stay aboard and finish out the voyage with us?
I'll decide that when we reach Port Said. Good night, Captain.
Late the following afternoon, we passed Port Tawfiq and entered the Suez Canal. The passengers crowded the railings and stared at the desert of Arabia on our starboard and the shores of Africa on our port. At dinner, there was a peculiar tension in the air. Everyone was talking, and yet the talk had an unreal quality. People joked about what they would find at home. One of the Dutchmen hoped the Nazis had bombed out his factory so he could retire. And Dubois, the youngest of the Frenchmen, predicted that his wife was now a bigamist. Everyone pretended amusement, except Mrs. Bruner. Suddenly, she got to her feet and looked around the table.
It's all very funny, isn't it? Laugh. Make jokes about everything that matters to you. Because you're afraid to believe there's still good in the world.
Pam, hold on.
I've seen it growing day by day. And now you're all simply terrified to hope. Then why bother to get on the ship? Why go home if it's to nothing?
Mrs. Bruner, I suggest that you sit down, please.
Why? Do I make everyone ashamed? Am I the only one who has faith in life? I know what you're all thinking. She lives in a dream. Tomorrow there'll be no one waiting for her at Port Said. Her husband is dead. And if he's alive, he's found some other woman.
Pam, stop it.
You want Eric to be your proof that nothing lasts in life. Eric is alive. He'll be waiting for me. He will.
At midnight, we passed Ismailia, the halfway point of the canal. It was impossible to sleep. The combined heat of Africa and Arabia seemed to press down on the ship like an invisible force. At dawn, I dressed and went back to the bridge. Mr. Pornison was waiting for me.
Sir, radio silence has been broken.
What? Officially?
Yes, sir. I was just listening to Cairo talking to Bombay. They were transmitting personal messages.
I wonder how long.
I asked Port Said, sir. They said controls were lifted 3 days ago.
3 days?
Shall I tell the passengers, sir? They've all got messages.
I'll announce it at breakfast.
Very good, sir.
Mr. Bonasson?
Yes, sir.
There's one passenger you might tell right now. She's down there on the foredeck. The sun was only a red hint on the horizon, and yet she was down there waiting. She wore a dress I'd never seen before, something white and feminine. The very best, I imagine. The minarets of Port Said appeared off the bow.
Maxwell joined Mrs. Brunner at the railing. Then by twos and threes, the rest of the passengers. Everyone was waiting, wondering. This lone woman had become a symbol for all of us. The landings and warehouses swung into view. Down channel, the customs launch put out and headed for us. I heard a voice behind me.
Captain, may I come onto the bridge?
If you wish, certainly.
May I borrow your binoculars?
Falling glasses.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Where will we go ashore, Captain?
Dead ahead, the wharf with the yellow warehouse. Mr. Orlick, reduce the quarter speed.
Reduce the quarter speed, yes, sir.
I could make out a group of men standing on the wharf. Mrs. Brunner trained the glasses on first one, then another.
See anything, Pam?
It was Maxwell. His face was set, tense. In a half circle behind him were the rest of the passengers, waiting silently, watching the woman with the glasses. On the foredeck below, the crew stared up at the bridge, waiting. Their own hope for the future somehow in the balance as they watched the slim girl.
You see him, Pam?
Stop engines. Lower ladder for a customs launch.
Stop engines. Lower ladder, yes, sir. Pam, do you?
No. Are you sure, dear? Yes. Well, perhaps he just couldn't get here in time. I thought if I believed strongly enough...
It would have taken a miracle, Mrs. Brown.
And they don't happen, do they? All right, Tony. We can go.
The passengers turned away. Their faces were suddenly tired, hopeless.
Captain, the customs launch is signaling us.
Stand by to take them aboard.
Yes, sir. There's a man on the boat waving, sir.
A man? Give me the glasses.
She fumbled and almost dropped them. She focused, then put the glasses down and wiped her eyes. Then she focused again. Everyone stood frozen. Maxwell, the mate, the helmsman, the passengers, the crew.
Eric! Eric! Eric!
Mrs. Brunner and her husband went ashore in the customs launch. The officers, the deckhands, the passengers, even Maxwell, stood at the railing and waved them out of sight, their faces smiling. Mr. Bonesson?
Yes, sir?
Do you think you can contact Oslo for me?
Oslo, sir? Yes, sir, I'll try.
Like to send a personal message.
Yes, sir.
To Mrs. Rudolph Arndal, Oslo, Norway.
Your wife, sir?
My wife, Mr. Bonesson. Tell her I'm on my way home.
It has been a long time, sir.
Yes, Mr. Bonesson. It's been a long way home.
Romance is produced and directed by Fred MacKay. Editorial supervision is by Het Mannheim. You have heard The Long Way Home, written especially for Romance by Leonard St. Clair. Ellen Morgan was heard as Pamela, with Hans Conried as Captain Arndal, Robert Bailey as Maxwell. Featured in the cast were Eleanor Audley, Howard McNear, Byron Kane, and Parley Bear. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to hear Romance, transcribed next week and every Saturday morning at the same time. Tired of it all? Whatever it all happens to be, we promise you complete relief, a complete change on the CBS radio program called Escape. Escape brings you off-the-trail dramatic stories set in places that are strange and different. It's Escape, tonight on most of these stations. Stay tuned for Stars Over Hollywood, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. You hear America's favorite shows on the CBS Radio Network.